It's Good Joe's Raptors rerun. Ben Ennis, JD Bunkus. Today we're looking at Raptors Sixers game two. And oh no, everything hit the fan in this game, JD, as Raptors lose 94-89. And what was eventually an entertaining finish, at least. But yeah, an ugly game pretty much start to finish for the Raptors.
Listen, I love everybody that's listening to these podcasts, and I want to take a quick second to thank everybody that's subscribed since these podcasts have come out, to new listeners, to anyone that's left a five-star review, because there have been some great reviews that we've received. We've loved it. We've enjoyed it. If you do enjoy this podcast, when it comes out, please share it on Twitter. Share it wherever you want. Tell people about it. Word of mouth is great, too. But I always wonder if I'm speaking to anyone when we do the Lost podcast, because the anxiety... We always start with Raptors fan anxiety level, and legitimately, the second I started rewatching this game, I remembered how anxious I was personally watching this game in the moment, which was Raps were amazing in game one. They were coming off of four straight games against the Orlando Magic where they looked amazing, and Embiid was sick, and there were all these rumors going into it about whether or not he was going to play. I can distinctly remember Michael Grange tweeting that Joel Embiid has the flu. And I quote tweeted and said, yeah, the Gasol flu, thinking that was really great. That was really funny. Yeah, really funny tweet by me. I'm a funny tweeter. I don't know if you know that about me. But it just seemed too good to be true. There was still no Mike Scott. He's a Raptor killer. And here's this monster opportunity on the Raptors' home court. And all I could think was, oh my God, there's so much pressure in this game. They absolutely need this game. You got to win game two. You got to keep home court advantage. You got to take advantage of beat up Joel Embiid. You got to take advantage of them playing, who at this point in time was still James Ennis and Jonah Bolden, who are basically nobodies. Raptors are supposed to have a massive bench advantage here. They win game one. They have this big chance. And this one I would say is like the everything came flooding back. All of the pain and all of the emotions of fan anxiety. I know this is a true, I'm putting this one at a true 7.5. How about you?
Wait a second. Hold on. All that stuff you're talking about all sounds like good stuff, and it only turns bad because they lose this game that they absolutely should have won. Are you talking about before the game?
Yes.
You were at a 7.5 after they put on that clinic in game one, looked so good for four straight games against the Magic, had the best player in the series, and you were still at a 7.5 on home court.
Did you just not hear my explanation? Did you tune out? Like what happened to your, did your headset go dead? We're working with difficult technology here.
That's all reasons for you to feel like the Raptors were going to win this game. Like
Exactly. That if they didn't win this game, that it was going to be an epic, epic missed opportunity. And those are the times it's like the 3-foot putt, man. It's like the layup with the game on the line. It's like the wide open three in a gym. It's like the tap in shot when it's, all the marbles are down, you start to feel a little bit like you're choking a little bit. And that was what I was worried about. This exact scenario of this game is exactly what I feared heading into it. And so my anxieties bled into, and I don't think I was the only one. Like, I really don't think so. I remember talking to fans, and I still have it. I went back, I looked at my texts from these days. Like, it was the same thing. Need this one tonight. Must win game. Need this game. So
yeah, but you felt like you were going to get it. Because I mean, that's reason number 7,532 as to why you never got further in your sporting career, because you viewed this in a negative light where you should have viewed it as an incredible opportunity to take a 2-0 series lead. I have my anxiety level written down here as 4 because of all those things, because of how good they looked in game one, because of how well they were able to contain Joel Embiid in game one, and then he's sick and he might not play in this game. Man, and Pascal Siakam fully emerging as the number two scoring option for this Raptors team. Those are good things. Felt really good about the Raptors taking a 2-0 series lead. Now, after the game, I'm totally on board. A 45 on the anxiety level after the way that ended. But yeah, before the game, I got myself at 4 because I'm a cool customer.
Gotta love our fake numbers. So story of the game to me is actually pretty simple. It's just, this is the ultimate frustration game so far. Even the game against the Orlando Magic, you lost to DJ Augustine on a one-off shot and other guys contributed. Kyle Lowry has the 0 points. He's the plus 11, but there's really like, it's pointing at a couple of things. Lowry went 0-for, DJ Augustine gets extremely hot, and Nick Nurse doesn't call a timeout getting Kawhi Leonard in the game early enough. This one is just, there are so many things that you can point to. Whether, like, Siakam and Kawhi outscore the Sixers starters in game one. So Brown makes a big adjustment, which is loading up on those two guys and having Joel Embiid now defend Pascal Siakam. And it's super effective. And Nurse really never makes a very good adjustment throughout the entire game. The bench does nothing. They get outscored 26-5 in this game.
Yeah, that's bad.
Like, that's pretty horrific. The Sixers have a 51-38 lead at the half, and it's just this ugly slog of a first half where nothing is going the Raptors' way. They score 17 points in the first quarter, and then they can't score for the first 3 minutes of the second half, the second quarter, because Kawhi isn't on the floor. They're just not hitting any threes. They're taking bad fouls. Serge Ibaka has, I would say, the worst half of his career as a Raptor. All of a sudden, Greg Monroe is popping off. He's like rolling to the basket and killing the Raptors on the glass and forcing Gasol into the screen and roll game and having effectiveness. And they're getting beat on the glass. They're missing shots. I don't have a one story, because I just think that the entirety tells the story, which is that everything kind of went wrong for the Raptors outside of Kawhi and Lowry. And it's just, you're watching this thing and seeing it and how many chances the Raptors had it despite such an ugly first half. And they just come up short.
Yeah, no, that's the story. Non-Kawhi Raptors shoot 20 for 66. That was it, man.
And Lowry doesn't count in that conversation. Kyle Lowry's good in this game.
Okay, sure. Yeah, he is. But that's, I mean, so eliminate him, it's even worse. But yeah, including him, they were 20 for 66. That's 30% outside of Kawhi Leonard. Yeah, man, it was a serious, serious slog. And part of that is the Sixers defense. But a lot of that is so many wide open looks just absolutely just missed by this Raptors team. This is the game where it really started to shift. And this was a story for the rest of the series about how Kawhi Leonard was really not getting a bunch of help. And especially in this game, his teammates let him down, because they could have easily stolen this game at the end of the fourth quarter if somebody, and obviously Danny Green, just makes one of those couple of shots at the end of the game.
Well, that I was just, where was the game won to you?
So I've got, I mean, it's hard not to look at scoring 38 points in the first half as being a big part of it. But Embiid, he's sick. He's doing nothing all game. Raptors cut it to one with the Pascal Siakam put back after he gets his own miss. And Gasol has Embiid covered at the 3-point line, and he backs him all the way down to the cup and finishes over him to make it a 3-point game. Of course, the Raptors have a chance to tie, but Embiid did nothing. Like, I want to say he scored on Gasol maybe twice. I think that was the second time all game they were matched up one-on-one and he was able to finish over him. That was the game. He had to score. He did. And the Raptors never tied it up, never led after that.
Yeah. There's so many moments in this game that you can point to where it's like, oh, that was the moment. You mentioned 38 points in the first half. You could have mentioned that at the end of the third quarter, when the Raptors cut it to 2 points, Nick Nurse goes with this Kawhi plus the bench lineup, where once again, Jody Meeks is on the floor. He's making another.
He was triple teamed at the end of the third quarter. With that unit.
And the 2-point lead balloons back up to 8 points immediately because they can't get on the glass and they can't score outside of Kawhi. It's like there's actually a missed wide open three with that unit, and Kawhi comes skying out from nowhere and grabs this huge offensive rebound. And you're just like, that couldn't have been more symbolic of exactly what was going on there, which is that it was Kawhi playing with a bunch of shells, like Fred VanVleet's doing nothing, Serge doing nothing. It's Jody Meeks and Norm Powell. And then they start the fourth quarter where Kawhi's on the bench and the Raptors can't score and the lead balloons back up. But I'm going to say where the game was won was just Jimmy Butler down the stretch, because it's important to talk about him in this game. Because so Kawhi gets an N1, and then Jimmy Butler immediately responds with an N1 of his own. Then when the Raptors have it cut down to four and they're in the midst of an 8-0 run, Kawhi misses a layup on one end, and then Jimmy Butler takes it down to kill the 8-0 run with a layup of his own. Then the Raptors hit a three. Siakam hits a three, and you're going, oh man, 11-2 run, back into it. And to me, what's like the most impactful play outside of the Embiid finish over Gasol that you mentioned is Raps are now down four. The crowd is so unbelievably loud, and it feels like the roof is about to collapse and that the Sixers are about to collapse. They're about to blow this thing. They're about to lose it. Joel Embiid is down on the low post, and he gets double-teamed by Gasol and Siakam. And even I remember this feeling this in the moment. I don't know how Joel Embiid makes this play, but he throws a pass over top of that double team right into the midst of Jimmy Butler late in the clock. He nails a three. It's a 7-point game. And yes, Lowry hits a couple of shots after that, and there's those opportunities for Danny Green to do it. I just think that if not for that little mini spurt by Jimmy Butler, the Sixers puke all over themselves. They choke. They lose this run. The Raptors go take it away. They have Kawhi Leonard. And I would feel wrong if I didn't have some place where I put Jimmy Butler in this game, because as good as Kawhi was, Jimmy Butler was just as clutch, matched the best player on the planet at the time, and maybe still, as this podcast is being recorded, blow for blow in crunch time in a fourth quarter.
No, he was great in this game. There was also the Gasol foul on Butler on the floor that Gasol didn't think was a foul. I thought he got hand, but Butler makes a couple of free throws there. Yeah, Butler was so good, and he was the reason they almost won this series. I'll give that to you. That if you're looking at a Sixers positive reason as to why they won it, and not just that the Raptors threw it away, it was Jimmy Butler down the stretch being clutch.
Yeah. So was your favorite moment also Kyle Lowry getting hot for those two threes late?
Yeah, that's what I've got. I've got like that sequence, right? So Lowry hits the two threes sandwiched around the Butler three, and then the Pascal Siakam put back after creating the steal off the Tobias Harris at the other end, and it's a 1-point game. And you're like, this, you couldn't play worse and have a chance to win this basketball game. That it was incredible that they did have an opportunity to win it with a couple of clutch plays from, I mean, Siakam, who was, I mean, just all around. I mean, the numbers are awful for him in this game, but gets his own miss and cuts it to one. If you're looking at a positive moment for Raptors fans, that was it. That was as close as they got.
I just need to say in this spot too, like, there's just so many things that go wrong for the Raptors. Again, going back to story of the game is just frustration. And I'll get to some of the guys individually as we go on throughout this thing. And, you know, but just before we do take or thought that age the worst, I got to say that, do you agree with me that that's the worst you've ever seen Serge Ibaka play, or that you can remember ever seeing Serge Ibaka play? Because he is just horrific in this game. Like, it's, he's, again, we're looking back at these games through the lens of what has happened in the 2020 season. And in the 2020 season, Serge Ibaka has been one of the Raptors' brightest stories of the year. As a starter, when Gasol's been out, he's been someone who's a walking 18-10. He's played unbelievable defense. He's been the steadying presence. He's been probably one of the most beloved figures this city has ever seen from just a personality standpoint. The How Hungry Are You series, now How Bored Are You, unfortunately, just, he's become this larger-than-life personality in Toronto, and you kind of forget the old Serge Ibaka's in the playoffs, where that trade was really looked at as something that was supposed to put the Raptors over the top at the time, and what Serge Ibaka was at one point in his career when the Orlando Magic, again, traded Victor Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis for him, and to see where he kind of is at in his career, which is just like, he's scuffling. It's a ton of dumb fouls in this game. Like, he just continuously bites on Joel Embiid's pump fake to the point where, you know, he even loses it with himself at one point. He just like walks to the stanchion and slams on it. And he's like, what am I doing? And I can, even as I'm watching it, I'm like, I don't even recognize this Serge Ibaka, because it's just brain fart after brain fart. Like, he steps out of bounds with the ball. He's missing clean looks. And Joel Embiid, who is sick as a freaking dog in this game, like, he's falling down early in it. He can barely stand on his feet. He can't find any offense. The only offense he's being given is Serge Ibaka just like continuously fouling him and giving him opportunity after opportunity. It's just, this was the peak level of bad playoff Serge, where he's doing too much. And the biggest take was when Serge tries to do too much or he's too central of a figure, the Raptors lose. And he kills them in this game, man.
Yeah, what a difference a couple of months makes for all three of those major bench guys. Because yeah, Serge has a career year in the regular season following this playoff run. Yeah, four fouls in 13 minutes. Norm Powell's doing his Norm Powell thing too, where he's just driving into a sea of arms and coming up short at the rim. And Fred VanVleet, poor Fred VanVleet, just cannot get his shot off. against the length of the Sixers. And of course, we know how integral to this Raptors team all three guys were. But yeah, Serge, so bad, man. And yeah, you couldn't play him against Embiid in this game. And later on, it's a hard matchup for Gasol.
So this is a perfect segue. And the reason I wanted to bring it up into to take that age the worst from this game. And I have two of them, but I'm going to start with this. That the buyout market killed the Raptors' chances of winning a championship, or that the buyout market really hurt the Raptors in general. Because this game, you look at it, and it's two games in a row where Serge and Norm and, I'm sorry, but Jody Meeks, who they also got out the buyout market, and Fred VanVleet give them nothing. Like, again, they get 5 points, and one's off a Norm three, and then another one is off of a Serge Ibaka pick-and-pop play where it's right in his zone. Kyle Lowry hits him for a bucket. But you looked at this game and thought, I can't believe this. The one time where the Raptors finally got a big buyout player in Jeremy Lin, he turns out to be this unplayable figure even in this series, right? Like, even as they're scuffling and trying to find offense, Nick Nurse doesn't even look Jeremy Lin's way. So their big acquisition isn't playing. Jody Meeks, who ends up being a filler as a three-point shooter, he's essentially unplayable as well. He can't do anything. Again, he misses. There's one moment where Devlin does the Jody Meeks because he's wide open, and it's not even close. It's almost a wedgie, as the guys from No Dunks call it. And it's because they missed out on Wayne Ellington. Wayne Ellington wanted to go to Detroit. He wanted to play minutes, and he scored in the Toronto Raptors, and you kept thinking, like, wow, they really needed a secondary shooter. And then all of this fallout to sign these two guys, the Raptors make the cost-cutting move of losing Greg Monroe, who's amazing in this game. Again, like, he's rolling to the basket. He's killing the Raptors on the glass. He has like 5 rebounds in his first 4 minutes of the game. And you're actually happy that he gets hurt and that Amir Johnson, the old Raptor, makes a cameo appearance in this game. And he's the first guy in the series before Joel Embiid to get Marc Gasol off balance for a foul at the rim. Like, he's awesome in this thing. And you think, of course, this is the way that it's going to go down, that the buyout market is something. And then, yeah, to add insult to injury, the guy that the Houston Rockets, who the Rockets have been, I would say it's hard for me to imagine that any team in the NBA over the last couple of years has been better on the buyout market when it comes to acquiring and identifying players that can just, you know, shoot threes and play a little defense for you. And somehow they cut James Ennis, who scores 13 points in this game with 6 boards and is a +7. It's like, it's the buyout market. You really thought in this moment that it was going to be this really, really big piece that was really going to hurt the Raptors, and eventually they get past that, and it doesn't really hold up.
Yeah, James Ennis was out freaking standing, and yeah, Greg Monroe was the better big man in this game, and yeah, okay, Joel Embiid, he was sick, but yeah, Greg Monroe did good things, and Amir Johnson, he was alive.
Greg Monroe gives them a good 12 minutes.
He does.
Where Joel Embiid is a complete corpse.
Yep.
And yeah, it's a 10-point, 5-rebound performance for Greg Monroe in a game where the Raptors lose by 5 points. It's hard not to look at that in this way. Like, that's always what happens in these games where you lose close, and that's why we put this as the frustration game, because it's one of those things where you always go like, well, what if this, what if that? But you really felt like in the moment, like, Boban hadn't done anything in game one, and even in this one, he only comes in for a minute. Boban is on the floor for 1 minute in this game, and he's a -5. He's gone. So had they had to rely on Boban for heavy minutes, it's just like, yeah, maybe this game does swing a little bit differently. Maybe those Greg Monroe minutes really did matter. And so, yeah, buyout didn't really age well. Do you have one, or do you want me to do my second one?
Mine is it's along the same lines. It's that it's kind of a similar take to the game one Magic take of that one ended up being correct and not a take that aged poorly, was that the Raptors aren't going to play as poorly as this. This is just a blip on the radar. And of course, yeah, they won 4 straight against the Magic. That was kind of my take after this. It's like, you win 5 in a row, 4 straight against the Magic, and then game one of the series. And okay, everybody stunk outside of Kawhi Leonard and Kyle Lowry, and Siakam was so good in that Magic series that those guys will bounce back. Turned out they didn't really. Like, this series was won by Kawhi Leonard, and Kawhi Leonard seemingly alone. Those guys just, he didn't get the same type of support he did against the Orlando Magic.
So my other one is the officiating. I remember in the moment, the officiating being a major story, because it's highlighted by a like Nick Nurse takes a technical foul in this game, which I actually in the moment really hated. And I looked back and I even saw a tweet where it was like Nick Nurse needs to worry about his rotations more than he needs to worry about yelling at officials about calls. And Brett Brown, though, walks to half court in the middle of play, and David Guthrie, the official, essentially has to walk around him after already giving Nick Nurse a tech in this game, and they don't issue a technical foul to Brett Brown somehow, when obviously you can't walk out on the floor right next to Kawhi Leonard over the halfway or over the half line and just be screaming at your team. And Brett Brown knows it, right? Like, he immediately goes back to his bench and he's like, doesn't want to look back, and you just assume he's going to get hit with a technical foul. He doesn't do it. And all throughout the broadcast, they keep talking about it, the officiating and tough call here. And there's a few moments where you look at it and be like, all right, there's maybe a ticky-tack foul here, ticky-tack foul there. But the fouls in this game are really close. And rewatching it without the emotion, like without watching it and being in the heat of the moment, like, yeah, Serge Ibaka's four fouls were horrific. So that's four of the Raptors' 22 personal fouls. Siakam is really reckless with his fouls in this game. Like, by my count, Danny Green is awful with his fouls in this game. My count was like maybe Gasol had a couple that were not so great and Kawhi Leonard has one. But the discrepancy in this game is the Raptors take 22 personal fouls and the Sixers take 18. Like, it just, the free throw discrepancy is a little bit bigger, but it's also because the Raptors get put into the bonus because of those stupid Serge Ibaka fouls. Like, I never once watching this game felt like the officiating was really one-sided. I just looked at it and said, you know what? There are some bad moments from the officials here, but it shouldn't have been one of the main stories of this game, which it was at the time.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I can't believe you didn't mention, okay, maybe the Brett Brown call, a non-call, was worse than this, but maybe right behind it was the Jimmy Butler 5-point play, because this is at the height of the Rockets and they're belly aching about, you know, having a landing area and the fouls that are getting called or not getting called against them. So the officials are on high alert. Like, he absolutely just kicks his legs out 3 feet in front of him, clips Danny Green on his way down, hits the three, makes the free throw, and Danny Green is teed up because obviously it's an egregious call. That was the worst call of the game.
Yeah, see, I don't see it that way. Like, I just didn't see it that way in the moment, and I didn't see it rewatching it. Like, I just think that's a foul that happens pretty regularly in the NBA. If there's a coach's challenge, they probably challenge it. You're right. Like, it's not the correct call to me, but I don't view it as something that was so unbelievably bad that Danny shouldn't have just immediately taken that tech. And again, this is just another spot for a segue. To me, the underrated player or underrated storyline of the game is Danny Green. And I know that that's kind of a cheap cop-out because he misses the two just monster wide open threes in this game where the Raptors have an opportunity to tie in both instances. Like, one is Kawhi Leonard draws all the defense and passes it to Danny. And it's like, it's right there for you. It's just, it's right there. And this is actually a real classic case of, if you would have done the defense of him, it would have been the same as the Kyle Lowry 0-point game, where you would have gone to the plus minus and you would have said, hey, Danny Green was still a plus 14 in this game. Danny Green was a plus 14. Yeah, because he was on the floor when Kyle Lowry hit a couple of threes, Siakam hit a three, and Kawhi was getting N1s. Danny Green is, in a game where Serge Ibaka, I just said, is as bad as he ever gets, at least Ibaka only plays 13 minutes. Danny Green plays 32 minutes in this game. He's 1 of 8 from the floor. He's 1 of 6 for three. He contributes in no other way in the game other than contributing the three fouls and then taking that technical, which was like sort of a Philly little bit of a run moment. Danny Green is just standing around in this thing. I couldn't believe how irrelevant he was in this game. Like, he's just, it's poor decision making. The first three he takes is blocked on a closeout where the defender could have easily been killed by a pump fake. And then the very next possession, he has a dribble drive where he decides, like, I'm going to take this thing to the basket and go into the paint where there's defenders waiting, and he skies a 3-foot floater over the rim. He's lost on defense like countless times in this game where there's multiple looks that Sixers players have where I'm like, who's responsible for this? And I'm rewinding the tape, and it's like, it's a Danny Green brain fart. And for a Raptors game where, like, if you're looking at things that have haunted the Raptors in the past, old Raptors playoff ghosts, It's not having someone who came up in big moments and hit threes. And here's Danny Green, this clutch playoff performer, this guy who's been incredible for them all season, this guy that was in the three-point contest. He goes 1 of 8 for them. He collects 3 fouls. He has 2 turnovers. And he plays 32 minutes. And I just look at this thing and this game, and all I could think of is, again, reasons why this team loses this game, reasons why the Raptors lose this game. How do they fall out of it? It's like if they just have a reasonable three-point shooting night, right? Like if Danny Green hits 2 threes, the Raptors win. They lose by 5. Danny Green hits 2 threes, and the Raptors are up 1 to finish this thing. And to me, he was the most egregiously bad guy in this game. And I would say that honorable mention would go to Serge Ibaka. And then if I had to do third star for bad, it would be Nick Nurse.
Yeah, the one field goal he hits is the last field goal the Raptors make in the first half, and it's a 3-on-1, and he pulls up from 3 instead of, you know, passing around for an easy 2, and he hits it, whatever, and you thought maybe that would be a slump buster and a smart move by him, but yeah, other than that, he was absolutely garbage. And of course, this is also viewed through the prism of, man, if things go haywire or if things go the way they probably should have gone with the greatest three-point shooter of all time in Game 6 of the Finals, Danny Green is remembered forever in infamy. Even if the Raptors win Game 7 with that egregious turnover that results in the Warriors having a chance to win the game in Game 6. But yeah, of course, watching this game, you're not supposed to take that knowledge that's coming in Game 6 of the Finals, but he was brutal.
You're the time traveler of our podcast.
I know.
You love to time travel. You're like, always like, I'm here, I'm back here. I'm like, just stay in the moment. Stay here in this game, Benny. Stay with me in this game. Did you wish you had a different take from this game, or did you nail it?
Yeah, I would just say that my take, I guess I was more calm than you. I had more confidence than you, because my take was that, hey, man, the rest of the Raptors outside of Kawhi aren't going to play as poorly as they played in this game. Kawhi's still Kawhi. He's the one constant. And they almost won this game. They had a chance to tie it up. They couldn't have played worse in this game. Still felt good about it. And a lot of the games in the series looked a lot like that.
Yeah, I just, even looking back at this game, you wouldn't trade it. You wouldn't trade anything that happens in this series. You wouldn't trade anything that happens in any timeline. But it really does feel like they blew a massive opportunity in this game, because the Sixers, again, were throwing up on themselves late. Joel Embiid, as I mentioned, is so, so sick. And they're relying on Greg Monroe, Amir Johnson, and Boban Marjanovic to try to give them minutes against Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol. And it's like James Ennis is outplaying Danny Green. And you got another great Kawhi performance, especially late. You got some big Lowry shots late. It just, to me, this felt like, in the moment, if you were going to look back at the series as to why they lost, you were going to point to losing home court advantage. And so in the moment, I think I just kind of called this thing correctly. I said the Raptors blew it, and I looked at my tweets, and my tweets at the time were about Danny Green's poor performance. They were about Serge Ibaka and how he was trying to do too much. And they were about Nick Nurse. And I just, when I watched this game over again, those were my big three culprits. And to defend myself with the Nick Nurse thing is, I think that we all have, and these will all come on down the line in other, you know, revisionist bad takes that didn't hold up. But I just think Nick Nurse actually does have a really bad game here. Like, it's not a good one from him. He closes the third with that Kawhi bench unit that I mentioned. He doesn't put Kawhi back in until after the 8:30 mark in the fourth quarter. Like, he, out of a timeout in this game, the Raptors are down 7 points. The Sixers call a timeout. And Nick Nurse sticks with Norm, Fred, Kyle, Serge, and Siakam. So 4 of those players struggling immensely in this game. They haven't been able to score without Kawhi. They have a timeout. And guess what? It's a 4-0 run. And Nurse is forced to use one of his timeouts because they lose this game. And yeah, in a ball game where, yet again, it's this close and it was this razor thin at the end of it, it really changes a lot if you probably insert Kawhi just 1 minute earlier in those things. I didn't think that his adjustment for Siakam was very good, where Siakam's on being guarded by Joel Embiid. And there's a moment in the third quarter, right, where Nurse decides, okay, fine, enough of this stuff. Like, let Marc Gasol touch the basketball. And immediately it like propels this Raptors run. Gasol starts getting touches, and he gets them deep because he's being guarded by Tobias Harris. And all of a sudden he's finding guys for wide open shots. He's finding cutters because double teams have to come, and he's drawing fouls. And I don't know why that strategy was abandoned so quickly. It just, the offense finally starts to flow from letting Marc Gasol touch it, who's a future Hall of Famer. And they don't really stick with that game plan and continue to allow Pascal Siakam to be guarded by Joel Embiid. So I looked at this game and I don't really think I blew any takes. I think I kind of had it. It's just that maybe, of course, the severity of, I wasn't calling the series over for the Raptors. Like, who would ever be doing that? You mentioned some of the reasons. I remember feeling in the moment very, very upset about this one because it was right there for the taking. And you got a bad performance from your bench. You got a bad performance from your coach, a bad performance from your starting shooting guard that has a real playoff pedigree, was almost a finals MVP. And it just left me with a sour taste in my mouth, even when I was rewatching it.
Yeah, Kawhi did end up playing 42 minutes. This was on a Monday. Game 3 in Philly was on the Thursday. So they had the bonus extra day off in the series. And they keep mentioning it on the broadcast that maybe these guys are going to get extended minutes. I don't know how much more you wanted extended than 42. But yeah, Kawhi plays big minutes in that game. But yeah, I did notice that too, right? Like you're like, okay, so this is the timeout in the fourth quarter. Here comes Kawhi. And Kawhi stands up, like he goes to the scorer's table, I think immediately as play starts. But they can't get a stoppage, so they have to take a timeout.
Yeah, no. I get it. You know, you point to 42 minutes. It's just that you have to be able to coach to the game script. And right there, it was just no time to be screwing around down 7 points with Kawhi still on the bench. He was your entire offense in that game. And I'm a believer still that the best load management in playoffs is to try to close out games you have a chance to win. And that hopefully you're going to be able to give those guys rest down the stretch. And they probably blew an opportunity there. Notable omissions.
Mm-hmm. I got a couple. So afterwards, Brett Brown, he was talking about Jimmy Butler, how good he was down the stretch. And he called him James Butler. That was the adult in the gym. And then Butler, maybe this was like foreshadowing of what happened and the reason for his departure from Philadelphia. He said, my name isn't James. It's literally Jimmy. So like his name, it's not like shortened from James. He's Jimmy Butler.
I like that. I forgot about that, and I really really loved reliving that.
Also, did you notice? So maybe I just didn't notice in game one, but this is the first time I remember seeing Sixers flag guy on the floor in those front row seats, and like every time the camera goes by him, he holds up that big Sixers. I get the only word I can use to describe it is a flag, but it's not quite a flag. It's one of those things that you pull out from both sides. Mm-hmm. Guy was super annoying, and I remember being super annoyed by that guy by the time the series was over, but I don't remember him in game one.
So I'll close with a couple of the positive notable omissions I had from this game, which is one, I actually really liked Siakam early in this game. And again, kind of a winner. Like, he's inefficient, he's missing some shots, but he's being defended by Joel Embiid, and he's still attacking the basket early, and there's really nothing going on for the Raptors. And he, at this point in the series, was still confident against Joel Embiid. He was still looking for his shot. He misses some. The second thing is the Raptors force a couple of shot clock violations early in this game, and sneaky, that became a bit of a calling card for them, right? Especially in this series, where their defense would be so good for those 24 seconds that opponents wouldn't even be getting up a look, wouldn't even be shooting one late after it. They'd just be kind of holding on to the ball. And yeah, like some foreshadowing, actually. Again, I love the foreshadowing in the series, whether it's, I don't know how many times you've noticed how much Kawhi loves shooting on the right side of the floor. Yes. And that he holds his shot.
And he always, it's never clean. Like, it always does bang off the rim.
Yeah, he shoots that shot. He holds the shot the same way. Like, these are things that you would never notice at the time, right? Like, not lock into it. Like, that's his shot going to his right. I didn't have even that confidence in the moment when he takes the shot. But all the foreshadowing shots, there's another one in this game of Kawhi in that corner. And yeah, whether he's covered, which he was for his three in the corner in this game, whether he's uncovered, he just likes to go to those spots. But I love the foreshadowing stuff. I'm really enjoying that. And so shot clock violations and Kawhi in the corner yet again.
Yeah, I've also got that. Hey, did you realize that all five starters, none of them, like, I know, plus minus, it's flawed. None of them are minus. And then you've got Serge minus 12, Norm minus 17 in 16 minutes, Fred minus 18 in 18 minutes, and then our boy Jody Meeks minus 4 in 2 minutes. The bench, just every time they stepped onto the court, were just getting their brains caved in.
Listen, I gotta save this take for a different podcast because it's coming later and it's a bigger one. It's too long for a notable omission. I'm done. Do you have anything else?
No.
Okay. Well, again, thanks to everybody who's listening to these things. We very, very, very much appreciate you. Thank you, especially to those of you that are following along game to game and actually listening to the Loser podcast. And you can always reach us on Twitter at JD Bunkus, at Sportsnet Ben. Please share this with your friends. Please share this on social. And leave us a review on Good Show's iTunes podcast page if you got the time.
All right. We'll see you tomorrow.